We're excited to change the world of startups for the better, but trying to make a difference and turning our good intentions into reality has proven to be more complicated than expected. We constantly encounter unexpected second-order effects. When we solve one issue, we end up unintentionally creating another one. It's dawning on you that being a good leader is more complex than simply having that one big idea. True leadership is about the difficult decisions and trade-offs you encounter whilst executing it. On this show, we explore the entrepreneurial zeitgeist with the aim to work and lead differently. Between all of us, we can decode what it will take to be a leader today. My guest today is Pablo Fernandez, a community builder passionate about human connection. He's the founder of Secret Table, a renowned experience design company that connects leaders, innovators, artists, and entrepreneurs. In our conversation, we talk about well-made events, deep connection, and psychological safety. No one wants a sleazy networking event with business cards, but we are all burned out from Zoom and small talk as well. We're so eager and we're so meant to connect deeply. Pablo shares about consciously creating community and why you might want to spend time with those who are different from you. Let's dive in.
In 2012, when I launched Secret Table, part of my inspiration for doing it was because I was scratching my own itch to fill a void in my life, in my professional life specifically. I had just moved to San Diego, maybe a year before that. And after spending 10 years in finance in a previous life, previous career, and then being in this new amazing city, I wanted to form more meaningful relationships in my life. And I wanted those to be both personally and in business. And I just remember feeling, after 10 years of being part of so many different networking events and seminars and workshops and conferences, there were so many times when I would come home and I would come home with this stack of business cards that had just been handed to me, you know, this like machine gun method of just handing out business cards. And again, the elevator pitch and small talk. And I just always felt like there was a lack of thoughtfulness and authenticity in that process. And what would inevitably happen is I'd go home with all these business cards and really never follow up with almost anyone. There are some times that I did, but most oftentimes it was just this collection. I had a box of business cards that had been sitting in my desk for years that I'd never even looked at again. And so I think after launching Secret Table, the way that I chose to think about it, and part of the philosophy and also strategy behind forming the culture that would be embodied through the Secret Table, some of the things that I would think about is I would rather go to an event where I authentically connect with 1, 2, 3, or 4 people, even in a room of hundreds, and have a real human connection, have a real reason for following up, than the prior. So how do you design experiences so that can happen? And so I think, you know, the birth of all of this was scratching my own itch and wanting to build more authentic community and wanting to integrate that and have it be present in my personal life and in my professional life. And so, yeah, that's kind of, it's a great question because it was the part of the reason why I launched Secret Table in the first place.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of sense because in the end, when I think about a lot of my business partnerships, my mentors, also my friends that help and advise and support me in business, like most people I've met at a conference and event, but usually, you know, the reason why we're close or the reason why we do things together is because we had a chance to connect more deeply, get to know each other, build trust for each other, and then the rest has blossomed from that. And so how does that look like? How does authentic relating look like in a context of business?
It depends on the setting and the context. You know, within the context of live experiences, I think that if the experience is properly designed for deepening human connection, it can happen quite easily. But I think that, you know, if you, as an individual, if you're part of an event where that isn't carefully thought through and designed for, you can still create your own serendipity and your own moments of spark and true connection. And, you know, like I remember one of the things that I did was I stopped having business cards. I stopped making them for myself. And so I'd go to these conferences. This was already post Secret Table launch. go to these events, conferences, and I'd kind of like hang out in the hallways and in the break rooms, and sometimes even just sit back and observe during breaks and lunches. And in many ways, oftentimes allow for something to come to me instead of always pursuing nonstop interactivity. And I would tell myself, the person or persons that I'm meant to meet at this, I'll naturally connect with, naturally flow into conversation with, and we'll end up exchanging information. And I would say more times than not, that's exactly what would happen. And so I think it's also just a mental reframe of being okay with less is more at these types of experiences. And also just in general, from a perspective of meaningful and impactful relationships on a personal and business level, is just actually knowing and believing that less is actually more. You know, a lot of these relationships that I made from events that I attended, where we would all of a sudden find ourselves in an hour-long conversation, but maybe I would have one or two interactions like that over the course of a day, ended up being some of the most transformative business relationships. And so I think some of it is just reframing your belief around it. And instead of thinking about how can I scale this or automate this or think about volume, it's definitely a quality over quantity position that I think is most helpful.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And I think for me, when an event is not curated, introduced, let's say one-on-one conversation or small group conversation, it can also be incredibly challenging. If everything that happens is going up to people, you know, next to the coffee and or, you know, raising your hand in a big panel, like someone like me will probably not be able to engage much because I'm too terrified to do these things and I'm too uncomfortable to do that. And so I think consciously knowing that it's not the aim to meet everyone or please everyone and focusing on that is a helpful framework. Curious, in a lot of startups, we hear a lot of talk now around we are a family, we're spending a lot of time together, we're spending our private time together, we have like after hours together, team retreats, different things, parties, etc. You know, if the kind of like sterile networking is on one end of the spectrum, then I think the spending a lot of time with the coworkers is maybe on the other end of the spectrum. And curious on your philosophy around that and how to navigate and how to find a sweet spot for yourself and also your team and community.
In many ways, it's some folks would refer to something like designing for introverts. That's another way to think about it in some contexts. But the other part of it is designing connection based around shared experiences that are maybe omnidirectional is a way to think about it. Like something where it's like not one to many. It's not a presentation. It's not a pitch. It's not a lecture format. It's something where it's interactive and engaging and really gives everyone an opportunity to contribute, to receive, to be fully immersed in a moment. I think that's really important. And I think that when you have those types of framings and opportunities, especially in small group settings, it starts to weave together almost like a culture of participation. And I think that that's where you can really feel seen and heard and also have an opportunity and or a possibility to actually form real relationships. And so, yeah, I think that there is a sweet spot for businesses and entrepreneurs to design experiences like that, where I think the net impact could potentially be greater for everyone involved.
What is maybe one experience that you either have designed or attended that stood out in you in that way? And what have they done right or what have you done right in that?
Well, it's funny that we're talking about this because one of the first that comes to mind is Burning Man.
Mm-hmm, of course.
Right. If I think about our Burning Man camp and I think about how this concept of shared struggle, right, that we've experienced, how it shapes the culture of the group, how it transforms the relationships and really brings out deep authenticity of the individuals that are participating. I think that that's a beautiful example where everyone can learn from and say like, wow, if through this shared struggle, we've really come out on the other end changed and also super bonded. And so if you take that context, that framing into all of the other different settings that you could apply something like that towards, I think that's a beautiful example that's well done, and you know that we have a bit of a connection to.
Absolutely. Yeah, I had a conversation with JR about this, and I think what I like about the Burner community specifically is that I think participation, ownership, contribution, gifting, you know, care, there's a really strong set of values that holds the community together, and people are really, really generous with their time and energy. And yet there's a lot of freedom in how that's being expressed. And that seems to be a crucial component for me. Like it's not one size fits all, right? Someone might be doing art or music or a workshop or a silent meditation or a costume or a gift or a jewelry. And so I think in many ways, there's a lot of like freedom to express your personality and preferences within the container of participation, contribution, gifting, et cetera.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautifully said.
It's also an in-person event. And I know you've been an advocate for in-person events and local events, which I think is also interesting because I'm calling you from Germany, you're in California. And so talk to me about in-person events and, you know, how maybe the last few years have shared your belief that that is a crucial component of building community and connection.
Well, the last few years, the last 2.5 years in particular, have been so unique, to say the least. And I think that what going through a global pandemic showed me, it was a lesson that I learned again in such a vivid way, in a way where it was a forcing function for learning. And I think the thing that stood out to me the most is that there really is, and this is, you know, might just sound simple, but it was like one of the most vivid lessons was that there really is no substitute for in-person connection. There absolutely is not. And I was blown away by how communities all over the world and individuals did their best and innovated and actually really just produced some beautiful moments of connection despite not being able to be in person, leveraging technology and creativity. Nevertheless, I run an event company, and I remember it probably just 2 months in, constantly hearing from people already, like, I'm zoomed out. I'm so zoomed out, right? Yet at the same time, people were starving for human connection. And the very first moments where I remember being able to reconnect with friends and loved ones and our general community in whichever order that was, I remember those very first few moments where we were able to finally hug each other, have close and intimate conversations, and just have that multidimensional moment of connection. It was like this internal sigh of relief, like, wow, oh yeah, this is something that we can never take for granted. It's so vivid. It's so real. It's irreplaceable. And of course it is, because communication, verbal communication, is just one very small part of communication. And how we impact each other on an energetic level is so significant. And so I've just, again, become such a huge advocate for the value of in-person human connection. And you can take that into business settings and personal settings, but I just think that there is no replacing it. And so when I think about how I intentionally design my life, my businesses, relationships with people that I care, I highly encourage everyone out there to not to take that for granted. And sometimes it's a little bit easy to take for granted because we get so busy in our busy, productivity-based culture, and we forget how valuable and important a hug, a moment, that energetic transference is. And so, yeah, I think that was one of the biggest things that reawakened in me. And it's like scaling the unscalable, right? It's like maybe actually even removing that word altogether, which is like prioritizing the unscalable, because yeah, those are the moments that ultimately they matter most. It's also similar to the concept of living to work versus working to live. And if you can integrate that, oh my gosh, what an opportunity. But yeah, if not, at least keeping it very much alive in your mind as you design your life intentionally.
I remember these months for Zoom. And then friends want to meet me on Zoom and I'm already 8 hours into Zoom because of work. And I'm like, I absolutely do not want to see you on Zoom, but I do kind of want to see you.
Yeah.
And so I feel that deeply. I pulled a quote here and I thought maybe you can elaborate that for me, which is, when we create in-person communities, our shared growth is not only possible, it's inevitable. What is that growth and how does that manifest?
I think this is probably one of the other most vivid lessons from the last couple of years. I think that another social dynamic that I observed was quite a bit of division and polarization in our culture. I feel like the last couple of years definitely heightened people's sensitivities to things that actually bring us apart instead of things that unify us, that we can find commonality around. And the combination of that with our productivity-based culture, how that is enabled massively and exponentially with technology, you know, the things that are maybe originally were intended and designed to bring us closer together, like social media, has actually oftentimes brought us much further apart, especially within the context of cultural division and polarization. And so one of the things that I have observed over the years is that when we give ourselves the opportunity, especially with the relationships that really matter in our lives, to have those in-person moments, those longer moments of dialogue and understanding between one human and another, that's where we truly can find an opportunity for growth more times than not, and especially in comparison to our fast-paced digital lives. And so, yeah, I think that the thing that's most vivid for me when I think about that quote and the reference to growth is maybe more closely related to empathy, understanding, unity, because I think that we create a much more likely possibility for those things to occur when we take the time to sit face to face and see eye to eye, human to human, and humanize these moments and actually potentially seek commonality or at a minimum understanding and respect. So yeah, that's probably the main thing that comes to mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So one thing I noticed when I was at one of the experiences that you co-created, the Experience House, is the emphasis on kind of like guided conversation prompts and really steering people towards going deeper. Because I think the tendency is, you know, we sit down at dinner and I did this, I did that, my boss said this, the client said that, you know, it's very easy to talk about anything. And in many ways, it's pleasant. But I've seen that the community had a big emphasis on going deeper and asking more personal questions and more emotional questions. And so how is that tool used, or where does it fit in your toolkit? And, you know, how can we kind of like engineer our conversations and experiences towards, you know, that type of interaction?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of my favorite things. And I'm really happy that you had the opportunity to experience it through something that I was a part of. I think one of the most fundamental components of that is establishing psychological safety. And one of the ways that as humans we can communicate the message that it is okay to be authentic, to be our true selves in any given context is, number one, to model that. So I am a firm believer of going first. If you seek vulnerability, be vulnerable. And I also am a firm believer of clear and direct communication. I think it's a bit of like a lost art and cultural norm these days. It's like everyone's afraid to talk to each other and be real. So if we can create and design spaces and circumstances where we can model vulnerability, authenticity, safety, psychological safety, and begin to ask those questions that allow us to go deeper. Like, what do you really think about that? It just can be something as simple as that. And then really listen. I think that that's the other part that we oftentimes have lost as a cultural norm. It's like, if you observe yourself, oftentimes you're thinking when someone is talking to you, they might be sharing something very personal. See if you can catch yourself already thinking about the thing that you're going to respond with instead of just sitting with what they're saying and really trying to empathize and listen and absorb it and understand it. Asking more questions than making statements and really allowing for that other individual to get through a full idea, and then turn those long form conversations where you can start to tease out rich context and real meaning and like real thinking, deep thinking on topics that are ever more increasingly complex in our modern world. And so I think, yeah, time, space, psychological safety, modeling, and just listening. And then just being okay with oftentimes just not agreeing, respectfully disagreeing. I think that that's like another huge piece. And stating that, saying like, hey, we might not agree on this, and that's okay. From one human to another human, I just want to understand you better. I want to maybe learn something. And just being okay with like leaving a conversation at that, I think is a huge component of designing more rich, meaningful, and deep conversations that then can translate into those types of relationships. That's how I think about it.
I love that. I have a friend who always says, let's agree to disagree.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you have some sort of like common ground.
Mm-hmm. It's such a powerful statement, actually. Yeah, because it's, you know, that statement is in many ways, it's like a pressure release valve. It's an astute observation when you've reached a moment in conversation or debate, right? Where you might feel like, okay, we've reached a standstill. And so to acknowledge that and allow it to be okay with respect and empathy, I think is massive. That would also be one of the biggest pieces of advice that I would give to anyone that's in a relationship with someone else, whether it's a friendship or a romantic relationship, is practice being okay and verbalizing and modeling those types of interactions, especially when it's difficult. Mm. It's really helpful.
I'm really glad that you love that. And I think it brings a lot of peace. You don't have to go to the very end to get someone to agree with you or take your side, et cetera. And just knowing that you can respect each other, even though on that specific point, you're not on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
How do you form agreements in a community, like to that point, right? Like agreements in terms of like how we want to connect to each other, what is okay, what is not okay. Do you think that is like a process of like collaboration? Is that a process of certain people creating the container and framework and others, you know, agreeing to that? Or how do you workshop that?
Yeah, I think it totally depends on the context. So, you know, there may be a business setting where you have, you know, the relational dynamics really matter. If we're talking about something as democratic and informal as co-living, then, you know, this is like an iterative and co-creative process that everyone participates in. And, you know, oftentimes what you find is the requirement for multiple meetings and iterations oftentimes is necessary. And then you finally get to a place where everyone's like, oh, this works for us, right? If you're in a business setting, it depends. If the context is you're running a company and you're building a team, and you need to come to some sort of cultural agreements and norms in the workplace, that's totally different context. If you're running a membership-based community, again, a totally different context. I think high level, my thinking around that is that there should always be something like that established. It's almost like the rules of engagement, the cultural norms and ethics that we abide by and how we treat and navigate relationships with each other. I think having something like that explicit and pre-agreed upon before engagement, before events, before moving forward with initiatives is critical. And I would say my advice would be, if as long as you thoughtfully have something like that in place, it's probably better than most people and places and companies. So even just going through the exercise of having something like that at all, you're probably ahead of the curve already. And so, yeah.
Yeah, my assumption is that a lot of this stuff is either, let's say, unspoken. Once you're around for a while, you kind of know how things go. Or incredibly fluff. And, you know, something that you read out, you know, on the annual review. And, you know, that's about it. I've been thinking a lot about this, like how can we find examples? highlight certain, you know, agreements and values within the team, and when people display it, is that like, how can we come make it come alive so it's just not just another thing that we said, you know, in a PowerPoint deck?
It's a worthwhile thing to dig deeply into. And I think it's not something that, you know, I think it shouldn't be treated like an employee handbook where, you know, the typical HR moment where you sign on to a company, you get the employee handbook, you sign off that you've read it. Most people don't, and you never see it again. I think something like this is more like a cultural manifesto and should be something that is reviewed biannually. It should be something that is iterative. It evolves with time and growth and complexity. And so, yeah, I definitely agree that more intentional anality around that is helpful.
And I think when we talk about community, and you spoke about community and growth, I think that honesty is where a lot of growth can stem from. And seeing like, where are we not living up to our expectations? Where are we exceeding our expectations? What do we want to do more of? You know, why are we loving to be here, et cetera?
Or not.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what do we do about it?
Exactly. I also know that you've spoken about community as a human need to be part of something that is bigger than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem to me that even when I'm my most introverted self, you know, I want to be around my friends, my family, I want to talk with peers, et cetera. And so I think there's no, it goes without saying that I think in many ways we are a very, very social creature despite all the digital media and all the things. How do we know if we maybe have come potentially to the right place, or how do you think about finding that community or collaborating on creating a community that serves a bigger purpose? How do we navigate that space?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I think that we absolutely are social and tribal creatures, and we seek to be a part of something greater than us. We seek to do it in community. And that doesn't mean that we don't also need our own personal time, downtime. If you think about the introvert extrovert spectrum to varying degrees, but ultimately, I think it's true by and large that those things are globally applicable. And I think that that's also one of the reasons why things like religions work for the vast majority of humans on Earth. So if you think about the ritualistic and cultural elements that religions get right across the board, that's a great example and a framework, a design framework for how you could think about creating your own community over shared values, principles, traditions, or how you could think about joining one that's already existing based on other things that you're in, that are shared interests. And I think, you know, personally, I can tell you what I do. In many ways, I've created a community here locally in my own local community that represents shared values, and we, you know, have our own form of ritual that is consistent. And I think that that's a big part of that, is the consistency in the ritualistic aspect of it, right? It's like families that eat together, stay together, similar type of a principle. And so I think what's likely most helpful and most exciting and also just most natural for the vast majority of people is that you would seek that out based on the things that you have as commonalities. But one very interesting thing that I love doing for myself, and this is, I think, part of the growth that I seek, is designing for difference. And I think that some of the growth opportunities that have expanded my world the most have been when I've sought out difference. How can I get curious and immerse myself in a culture or a community or with individuals that are absolutely totally different than I am, that think differently, that live differently? And of course, travel oftentimes helps with this, but I think more intentionally diving into communities of difference, I think, can be a very rich and expansive experience if you go in with this lens of curiosity and openness. And so that's kind of my personal formula around it. Maybe 80-20 version of that, right?
Totally. I'm very intrigued by this idea of like designing for difference.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, we know many things, I think, about biases, et cetera. Like, you know, when you're always in the same kind of like social group with like a similar social background, et cetera. And then the way we make our decision and the things we consider, and, you know, we might not be as creative, or we might be leaving interesting solutions out, or even not consider some people. And so would love to understand more what that means, designing for difference.
I think maybe the most timely example that I can choose to use right now would be something like, and it kind of touches on this topic that I was sharing about polarization and division in our culture right now. You know, some people call it the culture wars. And I think that what I'm referring to could be part of a growth process that can help heal that divide. More specifically, one of the things that I started to do years ago was immerse myself, at least, you know, like I said, it could be an 80-20 way of thinking about it, but some of the time intentionally immersing myself in communities of ideological, psychological difference, and entering those communities and those conversations and those events with an open mind, with curiosity, with questions. And I think that what that's done for me is it has allowed for me to develop a much higher level of empathy, understanding. And in many ways, it's transformed my thinking and judgment around those that I maybe originally thought to be totally different from me, oftentimes even like negatively and dramatically different than me. It's softened that line. It's like kind of blurred the lines for me to see the humanity in others and actually understand the context of why people are the way that they are. And at the end of the day, what I've discovered is that we're actually not that different from each other. Sometimes we've chosen different paths to get to the same end goal, but most oftentimes we're all looking for the same thing out of life. And, you know, we all care about human connection and about being healthy and making sure that our families and our world and our community is doing all right. So I think that in many ways, it is like an antidote to cultural division, is to intentionally take on that path or that process to really walk a mile in someone else's shoes, to really see it from their perspective. And I think it's quite helpful.
Oh, yeah, I love that as a mindset. And I love the 80-20 thinking around that too, saying like, okay, you know, most of the time I want to be surrounded by the people that I feel aligned with and that lift me up and inspire me. And, you know, we feed off each other. And then 20% of my time, I want to be curious and kind of like see what the rest of humanity is up to and why they feel the way they feel.
Yeah. And if I can add one more thing, it's like, for me, it's like more, most specifically, those that think very different than I do, that believe almost opposite of what I believe, or see the world in an opposite frame than the one that I see. And oftentimes, like I said, what I've discovered is for good reason, because their reality has shown them that. And the other thing that I'll say is, oftentimes I think the pushback from this, especially in this the context of culture wars and social media and platforms, this and et cetera, is that someone might say, oh, I don't want to give a platform to this group or to this way of thinking or living, or I don't want to validate. And I don't think that you have to. I also don't think that it means that. I forgot whose quote this is, but there's a quote that I love that states, you can't get wet from the word water. And I love that quote because, right, if you think about it within this context, it's like, I can hear something, I can see something, that doesn't mean I agree with it. But if you seek to understand with curiosity and openness, maybe there is a softening around the lines of at least understanding and respect. And I think that the more we can spread that in the world, the better the world will be, even if we decide to respectfully disagree.
I was about to say, I think it all comes back to agreeing to disagree and being able to hold each other in respect in that, because that opens the door to a conversation. Because I can't quantify this, but my sense is, as long as we're all yelling at each other, it's very hard for someone to change their mind. Because once you're getting yelled at, almost everyone gets defensive. And it's very, very hard to change your mind and be open and be loving once you're defensive and you're fighting back. And so like agreeing to disagree as a conversation starter or as a mindset, I think will be super important, you know, moving forward from here to actually explore each other.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you can only shame or fight someone into submission or into a state of being quiet or defeat for so long. That doesn't mean internally, deeply, transformatively, anything's actually changed. And most oftentimes it creates a opposite reaction. Oftentimes it makes the problem even worse. It'd be interesting. I kind of like the title Agree to Disagree. I think someone should create a podcast titled that and have some interesting, juicy, polarizing topic conversations on that.
Yeah, definitely. Because I think, I mean, doing that well in a podcast takes an entire new level of zen. I think you will have a lot of personal growth, like facing some stuff that you so wholeheartedly disagree with. And see someone kind of like stand up for that and defend that. I think that is a true masterpiece of your inner calmness and stillness and tranquility for sure. So maybe to bring it back and also to kind of like round out that conversation, one of the words that you've been using is experience design and very consciously thinking about how we come together, how we relate. For people who are new to this world and that are hosting friends and retreats or team meetings, what are some of the levers they can think about that they can pull when they want to design their experiences differently and how to get into it, basically?
I think the simplest way to think about it is, here's a simple formula. So number one, if you're inviting a group of folks into an experience, it's really important to let everyone know ahead of time. So the experience really begins before folks arrive at an experience. So it's important to let your attendees, your guests know why you're organizing this experience. Like, what is the purpose? Potentially even what is the outcome? What is the desired outcome? What's the goal? And then the other really important part is, what are the ground rules? But I think it's important to add that level of detail ahead of the experience and then to follow it during the experience. I think that one of the terms that comes to mind is structure creates freedom. And I think that in a live experience, when you can have the right amount of structure that allows for yourself as potential host and your attendees to follow and have a blueprint for what the experience will be, in many ways for the process of the experience, it allows for moments in between of a lot of freedom, expression, depth. So this, you know, relates back to some of the questions and some of the modeling or the conversation prompts that allow for that depth to occur. That's part of the structure that then creates this openness, this possibility. And I think that there is definitely something to elegantly facilitating a process like that. You know, if you're a host, if you're the moderator, facilitator, I think that there really is something to the importance of that role. But also on the flip side, it's also not over facilitating and allowing for people to have the space when it's appropriate to really, you know, express. I think another thing that's really important is time. So oftentimes in our experiences, if I'm hosting or facilitating, we'll have someone else that's like keeping track of the logistics, which also is keeping track of the time and the timelines and the cadence oftentimes. And I think that that's really important because, let's say if you're facilitating an event where there's a group conversation, you do want to allow everyone their fair share of time and space to ask, to share, to interact. But you also want to minimize an event from getting hijacked or from rambling. And that even includes yourself as a facilitator. I've definitely been in situations and I ask for this feedback from our team where I've been in an event and I've gotten a little rambly and a team member will say, "All right, I think we're good on that part and we're going to move this right along." And I'm like, "Oh yes, of course, it could happen to everyone. You know, we all sometimes feel like we have a lot to say." And yeah, so I think that taking all of those components when you design an experience, making sure that they are pre-framed with the attendees, following the structure, doing a good job of holding to the timelines, and then allowing for freedom in between. I think it's really important. And then there are so many different ways to design experiences depending on your outcome. But I would say like that is, those are some of the core principles that can be applicable to any circumstance.
Yeah, I like that. And it just reaffirmed my belief of stating very clear upfront, kind of like why we're here, what to expect, you know, why this set of people, why this set of activity, and creating that transparency. I appreciate that. On a practical note, if people want to see other things that you shared, find Secret Table, get to know you, where can they do that best?
Thank you. Maybe the best place is Instagram. One of my goals this year is I'm going to become active again on social media. I've been a little bit flying under the radar for the past few years. But at Pablo A. Fernandez on Instagram is probably the best place to connect with me and follow a little bit about my work. Also at Secret Table and at Experience House. Those are our projects, our companies, and would love to connect with anyone. And thank you for asking.
Absolutely. So I recommend to check it out and then show up at one of your in-person events. I think this is what we're all heading towards. Mm-hmm. Any final closing words of wisdom that you want to give people that we didn't have a chance to talk to so far?
If anyone's ever in San Diego, please reach out, because we, outside of our business, we pretty consistently host connection dinners in our home or in the area. It's something that I'm really passionate about doing. And so I think what I would offer is, if you're seeking more human connection, if you're seeking more meaningful and deep relationships on a personal and professional level, go first, you know, be the person that puts something together, and it doesn't have to be overly complicated. I think we've had a conversation about this before, where it's like, it's oftentimes the simplest thing with the right intentions and the right people in the right space and time can be incredibly rewarding and meaningful. And also oftentimes the consistency of that is what's most transformative. So I would just say, like, get out there and put something together, invite people into it, show up with your full heart, allow yourself to be seen and heard. And I think that, you know, one of the other probably biggest lessons that I've learned over the last couple decades of hosting events, but most specifically in the last 10 years, is that if you do that, people really feel that. I think people feel you first. And so if your intention is to create something special and meaningful for others, as well as for yourself, it's really felt. And I think that, like I had mentioned before, most communication is nonverbal. And so just showing up with an open heart and an open mind, modeling that, and really letting people feel your presence, being present with individuals, is already a transformative combination of qualities that I think could go really far. And so I would just say, go out there and do it.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I often think like actions speak louder than words, but I think to your point, energy speaks louder than words in many ways, and your contribution matters. Thank you, Pablo. I appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you so much. It was amazing. Thank you.